Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for being here with us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday. I know that for a fact. And it is the 9th of August in the year 2006. We have a special guest with us this evening. Well, all of our guests are, aren't they, folks? Let me first of all here begin with our spiritual message. I pulled this. This is a card from my Course in Miracles quote, little quote box. Listen to this. Your holiness reverses all the laws of the world. It is beyond every restriction of time, space, distance, and limits of any kind. I've had this sitting up for 3 days now because it's just beautiful to me, and it's a beautiful reminder. Let me do this again. Your holiness reverses all the laws of the world. It is beyond every restriction of time, space, distance, and limits of any kind. And that is so true. Our guest this evening, folks, is Jim McCanny. And Jim, thanks for being here, my dear.
Hi, Jackie.
Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me, and it's always wonderful to spend some time here with you and your audience.
Yes, well, it's mutual for me also, Jim. And I was thinking this evening before you called me, I don't have a bio on you, and I don't know if any of our listeners don't know who you are, but let us not take a chance on that. Would you just give our listeners just a short bio? Let them know. I want them to know that you're no guy in a diner, and that when you're talking, we're going to be talking about weather tonight, and
right.
That you have a right, you've earned the right to talk about this.
Well, my name is James McCanny, and I have a master's degree in physics from Tulane University. That was in 1975. And prior to that, I have a bachelor's degree in physics and mathematics from St. Mary's University in Minnesota. And that was in physics and mathematics, a double major. During the time between my bachelor's degree and my master's degree, I spent quite a bit of time in Latin America and teaching and also studying archaeology. I was teaching mathematics and physics and computer science, and basically taught the very wealthy people in some Latin American countries, and during the same time lived amongst the very poor. So I got a real bird's eye view of those countries. And also, as I said, studied archaeology. And then I returned to the United States and ended up with a teaching position at Cornell University for a couple of years. That was very key to my career because at that time the data was coming back from the Voyager spacecraft, the Pioneer spacecraft that NASA had sent out to the planets. And I had been working on theoretical space science, my own theoretical work, dealing with electromagnetic conditions in the solar system and around objects in outer space. And up to that time, nobody had really included these kind of concepts in theoretical work dealing with outer space. It was all related to gravity. And what I saw in the data was my theoretical work coming out. But none of the space scientists...
Excuse me, Jim. In other words, what you saw in the data that was coming back from the Voyager...
Right.
It was confirming your work.
Right. And
okay.
And so this was kind of the seed work. I started publishing papers. I was getting published in astrophysics journals. And all of a sudden, there was a great amount of resistance, let's put it that way. I was actually in the physics department at Cornell. And one day I got fired based on their belief that I was... publishing incorrect science, and some kind of voodoo science, according to them. And in the meantime, I got rehired also at Cornell in the mathematics department and continued to teach there. And so when you find my published papers in the astrophysics journals, they actually list me in the mathematics department at Cornell, where I spent another year and a half until they finally chased me down, and the astronomy department put pressure on the math department to have me fired again. But by that time, I was well aware of what I was doing and that my work was correct, and it took many decades. I continued working in the science world and then doing my own work. And here we are in 2006, and literally every scientific conference that occurs today is trying to copy my work, trying to give credit to other people.
But they're still putting a twist on it, aren't they, Jim?
Well, a very bizarre twist, because they have this albatross around their neck of all this old theoretical garbage that really none of it is true. But this led into what I call my weather work, because our weather is very much controlled by electrical conditions in outer space. If we did not have electricity in outer space, we would have extremely bland weather. In fact, clouds wouldn't form, we wouldn't have a jet stream, we wouldn't have hurricanes or tornadoes or cyclonic storms. The world would be an extremely bland place. So at any rate...
Well, excuse me. When you say a bland place, would we have rain?
Probably not.
Okay, well, there you go. We wouldn't be here then, in other words, Jim.
Well, we would have a water planet, but it probably would be somewhat of a humid environment, and there wouldn't be the winds. A lot of the conditions that we need for life here simply wouldn't exist.
Right.
Just a quick example, this past weekend, I'm sure everybody was aware of the severe storms, at least in the United States or wherever your audience is, but this was a worldwide event, and all of a sudden the whole world kicked up into pretty violent thunderstorms, tornadic activity, and activity in the ocean. And you see this on the satellite pictures. All of a sudden it just bubbles up out of nothing. Rain is actually, a lot of that water is coming from outer space, and the electrical source of energy for those storms is coming from outer space. What happened is we passed through a thin filament of electrical current that typically these happen around the month of August. It could happen anywhere from June to November, but August is the peak month, and that's because there's a return current sheet, electrical current sheet, that comes from the outer reaches of the solar system. And we pass through this region in the month of August, and that's why August is the peak aurora month. That's why August is the peak tornado month and hurricane month. This energy can be transformed into earthquakes and kick off volcanic activity.
And you're saying this is all natural then?
This is all natural, but there's a twist to it, because back in the 90s, I was working in when a lot of this was really developing into really solid theories on how the weather works. I went to the Air Force and the National Weather, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and passed off details on how to control hurricanes. It was a very simple method, because hurricanes are driven electrically from the ionosphere. And what happens when a hurricane hits the shoreline, it doesn't lose energy because it hits trees or buildings or whatever. It loses energy because literally the electrical currents that power the storm are shorted out to ground.
Oh, my.
And so I gave them a method to weaken these hurricanes offshore by simply putting buoy systems offshore and... weakening the storm offshore, therefore the rain would dump offshore and the winds would diminish before the storm ever hit shore.
How would the buoys ground the electricity?
Well, the buoys would be grounded through chains and fibers that would go down to the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. They weren't
just usually floating on the continental shelf. If you look at a map of the underwater topography around the continents, especially Florida and the Gulf Coast, the last 100 miles or so is very shallow shoals going off. And you would put these buoy systems out there, and then you would fly balloons, helium balloons, up into the atmosphere, and you would have hundreds of these in a big array, and that electrical current from the hurricane would then short out through this buoy system and would weaken the hurricane offshore.
Wow, and you said you gave this to NOAA?
For free, and the Air Force, because
did you interact with them? In other words, you know they got the information.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
And what happened is they took this information and the understanding that hurricanes are powered from the ionosphere, and, of course, the bizarre minds that these people have, they turned around and created weapons with these. And the way they did that is they devised laser satellites that could beam down from outer space through the eye of a hurricane and increase the energy flow instead of diminish it by the methods that I gave, and thereby could steer the hurricanes and strengthen them, and that's the cause of all of the severe hurricanes of last season.
Okay, now, it seemed to me that when you were on the last time, which has been quite some time ago, that you were saying, unless I misunderstood, that when they beam it down, they beam it just in front of the eye?
Well, that's
sort of like pulling somebody along by their ear, or...
Exactly. There's two parts of it. One is the beam ionizes the air path and causes more current to flow, which intensifies the storm. And the second part is, where do you place that beam? The side of the eye that you put the beam on is the direction that the hurricane will move. So you can basically drag the hurricane around by the nose.
Yeah.
And we saw this repeatedly last year as, say, for example, Hurricane Katrina or Rita. For example, Katrina went across the pan down the base of Florida, down through the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area, and it came out the western side and within 30 minutes went up to a Category 5 hurricane. Absolutely impossible by any standard of energy development in a natural mode. Hurricane Rita did the same thing, and we watched as they drug Katrina westerly, and it got due south of New Orleans about 250 to 300 miles out in the Gulf, made a sharp right turn and headed due north to New Orleans. Well, at the time, the oil future traders were trading like crazy and making a bundle.
Oh, wow.
Because they knew it was going to hit the oil-rich areas of New Orleans, the big refineries that distribute oil to all the way to New York,
mm-hmm.
and to the west to Texas. That's one of the initial refineries that does initial breakdown of the crude oil that comes in from all over the world, from Venezuela, from the Gulf of Mexico, from the Mideast, and
they hit Mississippi and the New Orleans.
Right, and when Katrina came up south of New Orleans, for most of the path, it was actually coming a little west of New Orleans, and then about 50 miles south of New Orleans, it took a slight bend and headed due north right up directly towards New Orleans. And as soon as it hit down by Venice, which is down at the very southern tip of the landmass south of New Orleans, it made a sharp right turn, went over about 50 miles, and went due north directly over the big refineries,
wow.
putting them out of commission. There were two major refineries that were directly hit by the eye of... I mean, they can drag these hurricanes around exactly where they want them to go. And then it made a sharp left turn and proceeded north. And when you see the official path of Katrina, you don't see that. But that's something, in fact, I was on the air quite a bit during that time dealing with those issues. And then the fact that New Orleans, they talk about the Katrina disaster in New Orleans. New Orleans had 70 mile an hour winds and basically a mild thunderstorm. They only had 4 inches of rain from Katrina. The next day, Katrina was totally passed, and the levees in New Orleans were all blown in seven different places
right.
by by charges.
Right, after the storm was all over.
Yeah, and that's why New Orleans had all of the flooding and damage. It was not due to Katrina. It was due to someone in there, probably managed by FEMA, blowing the levees. And if you see where the levees blew, they were up in the central canals where there was no surge of any kind or no rain or wind damage, and on the south side levees. I used to live in New Orleans, so I'm very familiar with the levee system.
Uh-huh.
I used to ride my bicycle around the levee system. I'm extremely familiar with that whole area. And to imagine that Katrina did this, Katrina was coming from the southwest. The only way you can get a surge into Lake Pontchartrain is to have a direct hit from the east, and that was not what Katrina did.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they have these so-called weather experts on that claim that a surge came across Lake Pontchartrain and blew the northern levee down by the French Quarter in New Orleans.
Jim, I'm sure you saw it, the article in Popular Mechanics, and I thought it was really ironic, or whatever you want to call it, maybe insidious. The article came out on the September 11th, 2001 issue, and it was about New Orleans being flooded by a hurricane. And they told all about it. Did you see that article?
In September 11th of which year?
2001.
Oh, uh-huh. Yes, yeah. And there was actually quite a bit of pre-announcement, so to speak, if you look at what you might call announcements or precursors or plants, news plants. They always plant these things in the news before they happen.
Yeah.
And I noticed recently, now I went to Tulane University, that's where I got my master's degree, and I was extremely disgusted to see on the cover of the magazine, I believe it was the Tulanian, which I get regularly as an alumnus of Tulane, to see the ugly faces, the sinister faces of Bill Clinton and George Bush Sr.
Oh, yeah.
And here's what these guys did. Of course, after Katrina, they went on Monday Night Football, the first opening night, and I remember they took over halftime. The entire halftime of Monday Night Football had pro basketball players answering the phones, raised $400 million. They had ads in Time Magazine and Newsweek and for Katrina to raise money for the victims, and raised over $400 million.
At halftime?
During halftime at Monday Night Football.
Oh, my.
7 weeks later, there was a picture of them in the New York Times dancing out of the Oval Office in the White House with gleeful looks on their face, saying that they were still trying to decide how to spend the money. And this was raised in the name of the desperate people of New Orleans who needed immediate relief. Well, much to my anger, they gave about half of that money to Tulane University, and then gave the commencement talk this past May at the university for the graduating class. So here you have those two clowns.
Oh, my God.
Up there muscling their way into my alma mater with their blood money. I'm very angry about this.
Well, I can remember reading that an investigation was underway, because I did not know about what you just told us about them raising all this money at halftime.
Right.
But I did know that they were in charge of it and, you know, misappropriation of the money.
Yeah, well, first of all, how much did they really raise?
Right.
And why didn't it go to the people that, now, when people gave money to that and called in, they were being sucker punched into believing they were donating this to the poor. So there's $400 million earmarked by a good intention public.
Yes.
To go to the needy in New Orleans, and these guys sat on it for 7 weeks and didn't do a thing with it, and then diverted the money to places where it didn't belong. And I know from my my correspondence that I get from Tulane that obviously they had a lot of damage. They were in need of repair, and that's clearly the case. But this money was designated for the poor. And we know that a lot of the poor communities of New Orleans have been literally wiped out. And nobody knows what's happened to all these people. The death toll was probably at least 100,000, possibly more. Nobody even knows. So the sinister nature of these people, and then to glorify themselves with donating this money to a university. The other part is that somebody has some big plans for New Orleans. And it is one of the UN designated, what would you call it, the ethnic cleansing area.
Right, right, right. Well, I'll tell you what, I had a gentleman on the air with us. You were on the air with us right around that time. And he happened to live, they had just moved. In fact, it was his wife. It was like, you know, it hit her instantaneously, spontaneously, we have to move. And he said, because, you know, she has an intuition that serves well. He didn't argue with her. So they weren't in the midst of it, but many of their friends and, home, you know, homes and businesses were lost, et cetera. He did some absolutely, or she did, just outrageous research on what was going on in New Orleans, and I've got this, all this stuff, and I've thought about sending it to Darren to put on the, on our website, except I don't know where we'd put it. I mean, but I will tell you that the there was one particular man, and the bio on this guy, I mean, he was connected with the mafia, and he was denied a license to put up a gambling casino in Las Vegas because of his criminal background. This guy was buying up property all over New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're right, they've got some plans. There was one article that appeared, I think, in the New York Times where the elite there got together and they said, we're going to rebuild, but they're not coming back. They're not coming back or we're out of here. So it was, you know, it was all planned, Jim, just as you said.
Well, about 2 weeks before Katrina hit New Orleans, Bill Clinton approached Donald Trump, and of course they're a good personal friend.
Yep.
And Donald Trump said this on, I think it was Oprah Winfrey one day. He was on talking about real estate, and he mentioned that, and I'm pretty sure that this is where it came out. He said that 2 weeks before Katrina, Bill Clinton had approached him about building some new mm-hmm. major developments in downtown
mm-hmm.
New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hello, did somebody know something
That's
about
right.
what was going to happen?
And you know what else I got? I got an email. It was actually from, it was a scientific thing, and somebody found it. And a huge, huge, huge underwater mass of oil right off the Gulf there.
Right.
You
yeah, in fact,
that?
New Orleans is, as below New Orleans is a vast oil
yep.
reserve.
So there you go. That yeah.
And also, it's, you have to understand, it's within the top five ports of the world. New Orleans has, the river system there has over 75 miles of navigable river,
wow.
the Mississippi, and it's the fifth largest and most active port in the world. So you know that this is a strategic place. If somebody took the world and said this, 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 and this, New Orleans would come out in the top five.
Wow.
And it's not, they simply don't like all these poor people down there.
Yeah.
Don't mind their culture or the whatever. Well, I was just down there the May before New Orleans.
It was ethnic cleansing, basically.
Yeah, it's ethnic cleansing. And if you see a lot of the, they look like small skirmishes. Kosovo, where Clinton went in and bombed a lot of the historical treasures
yeah.
of that region, they're doing the same thing now in the Mid-East. in Iraq. Yeah. They say that there's not a historical building left in Baghdad.
Well, think about this, Jim. After the first war out there, the first period of genocide, I guess we might call it. It wasn't a war, but the first Gulf War. From that time until the second one, they did bi-weekly bombing strafes. Think about it. You know, there is so much history right there. I didn't know that Iraq was where Babylon was.
Yeah.
You know, the
yeah.
old Babylon. But, in fact, a book that I shared with our listeners last week, some excerpts from it, God's Genes and Consciousness, the author suggested in this book that very possibly the war that is going on right now and the previous one was to totally desecrate the area so there wouldn't be anything to dig up. No archaeological artifacts left.
Well, the actual reality is that the timing of the current, if you want to call that, Gulf War II or whatever, was based on the fact that Saddam's archaeologists had just uncovered a very rich deposit in a city there, believed to actually be the historical Babylon. And that was the reason for going the timing, because they didn't have to go in exactly at that time they were going to, but it was that archaeological find that actually triggered the invasion.
And the exact day was the eve of Purim. Are you aware of that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the first Gulf War was also, their first strike was on Purim. And, Jim, I saw this on CNN when Aaron Brown and a couple of the announcers were just dancing in their seats. They said, we're expecting any moment for the president to announce, you know, that we are going to war. And underneath, you know how they have that scrolling thing?
Right.
This wasn't a scrolling thing. It was a box, and it was stationary. And as he was talking, it said, "President." I have to paraphrase here. I've got it on video, though. I was taping. Presidential decision to go to war, and then big letters, a time of our choosing, and it was the eve of Purim.
Mm-hmm.
Jim,
I
thought, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this. And they never did it again. It was just that one time, a time of our choosing.
Well, people have to understand who these people are and what their game plan is.
Yeah.
But
what do you say their game plan is?
Well, it's very bizarre, but they are destroyers.
Yeah.
They take delight out of destroying. They've never built anything in their history. They've always taken something that someone else has built up and then destroyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in the truest sense of the word, they're destroyers.
They're destroyers.
And if there's anything left that is good, or anybody with good intentions, they want to destroy those. They're evil people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that live everyday lives and work hard and work, you know, paycheck to paycheck, they don't understand that these people lie to make themselves look good to you so that they can be where they are today.
Yes.
That's part of their...
And the ones we're talking about refer to themselves as Jews, whatever the heck a Jew is. I've never been able to figure it out, Jim.
Well, it's a very loosely...
Yes, it is.
...knit group of people, and the other thing they do is they assimilate or try and become someone else or adopt someone else's history.
Yep.
And you might say, why do they... You know, this is a legitimate question, and it is not racially or ethnically bound, but... Why did they call it Israel? Why didn't they call it Ireland or Scotland?
Yes. Isis, Ra, and Al, the three gods.
Because it would make just as much sense.
We're going to take about a 3-minute break here. We'll be right back. Jim, thanks for coming on tonight.
Okay.
This has been so fascinating. Folks, we'll be right back.
Hey. If you'd like years to ahead of the dominant media, FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net around the world and on satellite.
And you'll receive an MP3
CD. If you read the history book, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North, the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Past Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself.
Most of the programs War on First Amendment Aggression.
Get this DVD presentation.
Don't do internet.
Or a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
First
call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, I think we're back here. That was a shame because two commercials were playing at one time. And folks, what the one that you missed, I've had several emails from people saying, I want to support the broadcast, how can I do it? And what I've asked them to do is to support First Amendment Radio because it is listener-sponsored. And I'm sending no money to WFAR for the broadcasting. It isn't that it's free. It is that Nicholas very generously allowed the broadcast to continue when we couldn't pay for it. And the phone number, you can go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com if you want to. They said you can adopt an hour. It's $25 an hour. And I just thought about that. I mean, if 16 people or 18, 20 people adopted an hour, that would be $25 a month. Sweet Liberty would be paid for. Well, it would be less than that, wouldn't it? Because we're only three nights a week now. Darren Weeks is on Monday and Tuesday, and I'm on Wednesday. And so, therefore, if you do appreciate the broadcast and want to be a part of it, contact them at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or you can call them at 559-781-3773. And I hope you do. Those of you who have offered, I hope that you have followed through with it because it's. We went for a long time before I went off the air. We were on four nights a week. And when I just didn't have the money, because our shortwave airtime was so high. And I told Nicholas, I said, I can understand if you, you know, have to stop the broadcast. And he never did it, folks. So therefore, I urge you, if you do appreciate the information that Darren imparts to you and the Wednesday nights, that information that you get from Sweet Liberty, give them a call and do become get involved. Thank you. And Jim McCanny is our guest tonight, folks, in case you may have tuned in late. And Jim, you know, I had a call this evening from a listener, and he says, what are you and Jim going to be talking about tonight? I said, well, the weather, but I said, you never know where it's going to go. and it's always fascinating. Always fascinating.
The weather can bring in many diverse topics, as you can see.
It does, doesn't it?
Weather is not just the weather anymore.
Whether we like it or not. That's the name. That's the title that we put on our weather, the section at sweetliberty.org, in the weather section, whether we like it or not, because that's about the size of it. You mentioned just before we had to take the break, you wondered why they named it Israel. And when you think about it, I mean, it is just, it's a name that takes in three gods, Isis and Ra and El.
Well, the thing is, that would imply that who lives there is an Israelite.
Right.
And it's simply not true.
Well, for the most part, they're Khazarians, aren't they, Jim?
What's that?
They're Khazarians.
Well, and I'm glad that there's a bit of history coming out because, you know, and to hide behind this, they're trying to say bad things. Well, if people make up stories about who they are and where they came from and then take on the persona of someone else, and someone points it out, that's not slander, that's not bad-mouthing somebody, that's simply telling the truth.
That's
and if
right.
somebody has a problem with the truth, that's the one amazing thing, because it's like the spoiled little kid who gets caught with something and then starts to bad-mouth Johnny down the street as a diversion, you know, and that's the kind of little acting out that we're seeing
mm-hmm.
here. So I don't see, for example, I'm Irish, very proud of it, but there's certainly no lack of jokes or bad-mouthing of Irish, and comedians get a lot of mileage out of it, but I'm certainly not going to go out and try and pass a law to prevent people from telling Irish jokes or saying negative things, and if they want to do that, that's their business. And the history of the Irish is very crystal clear. But I'm not going to go out and attempt to change it or say that I'm someone else.
Right.
Or take on somebody else's history and say that that's me now. So these are real issues. They are dealing with the truth, and people that have problems with the truth, that's too bad, I guess, you know. They have to learn that they live in a world with other people, and I think that's part of the issue too, is that we live in a very diverse world, and people who do not tolerate other people for ethnic reasons and then claim that people don't tolerate them for ethnic reasons, you start to see the quagmires that develop here.
Well, when they talk about racism, and then you read about Israel, and you discover that a Christian in Israel is not safe today. If there are any left, I don't know. But
yeah, these are extremely complex issues, and unfortunately, what has happened in many places, and you would see that in the Mideast, if the arms dealers were not selling arms to these countries, they'd be throwing rocks at each other. You know, and there would be, I mean, if they have feuds, and these are age-old feuds. But the trouble is that the United States is has been thoroughly taken over.
That's right.
And misguided and redirected. So a lot of what you see today is really the result of very distorted points of view, trying to distort history, and you find that much of the history you see today is extremely distorted from reality.
Well, it's all distorted, Jim.
And
there isn't really the only thing, even in high school when we studied history, when you look back, the only thing we got that may have been accurate were dates and some names.
Right. Exactly.
That's
and
nothing
the,
else.
The one thing, you know, when I'm on radio shows, I try and summarize, and it's very clear that the central core, we were talking about the people that run things, and the level that oversees the world, in fact, I've personally met a lot of these people. Some of them I became familiar with a long time ago before I really knew what was going on. But the international banking finance groups, there are about 6,000 people who run the world. And some of these families are very related and infiltrated in the governments and security agencies around the world. But the one thing they have in common is keeping pandemonium around, keeping wars, false nationalism. But the bottom line is phony money, worthless money and banking systems, taxation, and war. And these things, until people understand that all of these go together and they're all tools, and every 10 years they can call another war and pull an event and get the young people of this country to march off to the Mideast for some absolutely ridiculous event that, and then they find out 5, 6, 7 years later that it never happened and it was a structured event. The oldest trick in the book is to start a war by having your own country attacked. There's a great scene from a movie called The Princess Bride, and it's with Sean Penn, and there's a line in there, and this guy is starting a war by, and it's actually a kind of a comedy play, it's a light humor type of movie, but there's a line in there, and this Andre the Giant says to this guy who's starting a war by kidnapping the princess, and Andre the Giant goes, well, if the guilders see this, they're going to start a war with the prince. And the guy goes, that's exactly right. And Andre the Giant says, well, that wouldn't be right. He goes, look, starting wars is one of the most oldest and honorable professions in the world.
Wow.
And you know, and this is a, you know, he's saying it in, of course, sarcasm, and it's part of a line in the movie, which is a humorous movie, and it's a fantasy.
Well, but the thing is,
it's true.
They Hollywood and Alan Watt, who's been a regular guest on this broadcast for a long time, he's said it many times that they show us. Hollywood shows us, and they do it through cartoons. They do it through, you know, any type of movie, even a comedy. You see the twist in it.
Well, when they wanted to drum up fervor for the current Gulf War, they went to Hollywood and they had about 4 movies.
Yep.
It was Saving Private Ryan, Black Hawk Down, and I can't list all the other ones. Hollywood has been instrumental back through World War II, the Bob Hope tours, and the, you know, to keep the GIs drummed up through the World War II. And yeah, Hollywood actually became big back in the 30s, post-World War I days.
Yep.
And that's where Hollywood really got going. And, of course, it was used throughout history, entertainment. And then before that, plays were used.
They were East European Jews that came over here and settled Hollywood. And I've got a video here that Alan sent me. It was actually a documentary, and it was made by them. And they brag on this thing. I mean, they show from the very get-go all these big-nosed, you know, guys coming over from Eastern Europe and starting the flicker movies and et cetera, and they brag about how they create culture and how they help to foment wars. I mean, every single war, you know, and all the songs, it's all the same group, Jim.
Well, it's an entire piece of history that has a hard time getting out. And one thing I'm noticing with part of the younger generation is that some of them are at least, I don't think they understand all the history, but they're starting to understand that they have to start and take control of things. And unfortunately, it's something that this generation has lost control of, and that's a reason I continue to work, and through my time on the radio, etc., I hope that I reach young people.
Yes. Yes. Yes, because, you know, it's a shame, people of my generation lament the fact that their own children are just have a blind eye to this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we were blinded and didn't pay attention to what was happening in the schools, and they were victims of the indoctrination system that we used to call the educational system.
Yeah, I'm amazed that, for example, this was just a little encounter I had. I didn't understand this because all my personal education has been in private schools. But
was that any better?
What's that?
Was that any better?
Well, for me it was. And I, you know, everybody is individual.
But I mean, did you get accurate history in your private school?
I would say I came to understand a lot of this myself.
Okay, there you go.
because of where I traveled and who I met and,
right.
and my insights and my ability to maintain a truthful view on mm-hmm. things.
Discernment.
Yeah. And the fact that I was taught ethics in college. I just did a radio show this past week on ethics, something that was dropped from the Harvard Law School and the Harvard Business School about 10 years ago because they didn't think they needed that anymore.
Yeah, well, today they have bioethics, Jim. And bioethics is the genocide of the elderly and the infirm. And that's what they're calling ethics today. Bioethics. If you did a search on the internet, it would just make you sick to your stomach. But that's what they're calling it. You were going to tell us something. You had a conversation. You didn't understand it. I think I got it. I got you off track.
Oh, okay. The military has the federal government gets their muscle in every time a new school is built, a public school, and many private schools, and they give them grant money. And one of the things they're allowed free rein is to have military recruiters
yes.
on campus or in the high school, and they actually can go in at will, mingle among students during lunch hour. They set up a table outside. And parents have complained about this and said, why can't we then have a parents group? Oh, no, you can't have a parents group in here. And the rationale they give for allowing the military in is that there was federal money donated.
That's
therefore,
right.
The federal government has the right to have their military arm in their recruiting. But wait a minute. Didn't the parents pay for this school also, probably the majority of it, with their tax money?
You know what you made me just think of, and I don't want to interrupt our train of thought. The money, all the money coming into local and state governments comes from the federal government. Not all of it, but enough of a share of it that the federal government has oversight. We have a book that was written in 72 or 74 by Phoebe Courtney, and it's titled Beware Metro Government, and it's in, I believe, either our regionalism section at sweetliberty.org, or it would be in states' rights, or it would be books online also. And anybody who wants to understand why it's happening, what's happening today, what you just said, you read the book and you see. Jim, I did not know this, but do you know that our state income tax is funneled right into the federal government?
Well, it's linked
and,
to it.
It's funneled into the federal government. And all of our local and state taxes, besides the federal taxes, go to the federal government. When it comes back with all the strings attached.
Right.
That's
yeah, and one other thing that I found is in every community, if you think you live in a little town and you're immune to this and remote, there are agencies in every city, and you could probably name them off as well as I could, Jackie, and these are oversight, and you'll find that they are there for every groundbreaking ceremony for a school, for a city hall, for a...
Yep.
any public building, they're the ones in there making sure that this bond issue goes through, etc., whether the people want it or not. They hire professional consulting firms to go out and get the key words that will make the public vote these bond issues in. And then when the groundbreaking ceremony is there, you see these groups represented on the front line. And you will find that every small town in this country over the last probably 5 years has built a new city hall and police department built together with secure underground holding areas. And all of this has been done, most of it has been done without voting by the public, which is illegal, of course, but it has been done on various forms of tax increment financing and other types of creative use of funding that doesn't require the public to vote on them. So what you found is that the local governments are totally out of control of the populace. The state governments are basically there to perform the interests of the federal government. For example, I live in Minnesota. A Scandinavian, heavily Scandinavian and Irish Christian state, and you have a governor and traditional Democrat, very heavy Democratic state. So how do you have a governor who is of a totally different ethnic variety and Republican being voted in on the heels of one of the greatest independent landslides ever, with Jesse Ventura being governor? Minnesota is a very key state. Dick Cheney comes here a lot to maneuver the elections.
Jim, what you're finding is called vote scam, honey.
The people
could vote in, most often probably do, somebody who never makes it into office because of vote scam.
Minnesota, is, a lot of people don't know this, is the one state that would be the very closest to becoming independent overnight. We're adjacent to Canada. We have two international ports in Minnesota, even though we're apparently landlocked. We have Duluth, Superior, one of the largest inland ports in the world, accessible by any size ship available. We have the Mississippi River ports in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And we get 95% of our oil from Canada, from a pipeline that comes out of Canada. We grow all of our own food. Minnesota is the largest producer of biofuel in the United States from corn and soybeans, and it's building more plants.
GM corn.
What's that?
It's probably genetically modified corn.
Well, I'm not sure. But the point is that Minnesota could go to the euro and or another monetary system overnight and become independent in a flash. So it's a state that they're very, concerned about. And the populace here, too, the last gubernatorial election before the current one, elected a guy who was a professional wrestler, because he took a bar bet one night and somebody said, "Hey, Jesse, will you run for governor?" And he's sure, you know. And he went out and he became an independent. And I remember on the radio, there's a radio station here, an AM station that everybody listens to in the morning, about 4 million people in Minnesota, and about half of the state is listening to this show as they drive to work. And Tom, the lead host on that show, got on his high horse one morning because the Minneapolis Star and the St. Paul Pioneer Press, the two major newspapers in Minnesota, said there's no way that this guy can win, and they gave the statistics of the Republican and the Democratic candidates. The Democratic candidate was Hubert Humphrey Jr., Hubert Humphrey's son, and the Republican candidate was equally, you know, impressive in political stature nationally. And this guy on the radio got on his high horse, and he said, "I want everybody to go out and vote." And it was the biggest landslide victory in history, Jesse Ventura beat both parties hands down, together.
So you think they overrode the vote fraud, and there were so many of them they couldn't...
Right. And then the paper said, oh, well, it was just a bunch of young kids out voting.
Yeah.
And when they did the statistics, it was across the board. It was like,
What did Jesse Ventura do as governor?
Well, he cut back on the budget, and he was in for one term. He had a hard time because, of course, there weren't that many independents in the legislature.
Uh-huh.
So there was a lot of infighting that went on trying to keep him from actually accomplishing anything. But his final parting words, he said, I can only run for one term, because his final words were, he said, until you get the money out of government, you will not have government. And that's all it's been ever since. The last Republican guy
right.
that's been in, they voted in three stadiums that have never been able to get through the legislature before, giving one to the Minnesota Vikings, which is a private business.
Yep.
One to the Minnesota Twins. The owner of the Twins is worth about $5 billion, $2.5 billion publicly aware of, Carl Polad. And the state has to buy him a stadium for $500 million? Hello?
I know, I don't think it's funny. I don't know why I laugh at these things.
But this is a bit of a tangent, but
it isn't at all.
The point is that the United States has literally been taken over. The voters have been cast aside, and the legislatures are totally controlled. Big business and the mafia, who controls the construction of these projects,
mm-hmm.
all are in the back pockets of these legislative groups.
Jim, it's pretty much been that way from the get-go. I found this out. I started to write an article called Jewish Persecution. Because of all the books I had read, I realized that Jewish persecution was something that was always promulgated by the elite Jews, those who call themselves Jews, to cause the divisiveness. And I was going to write an article about it, and it became a book. And the book was the journey for me, because these thoughts and questions kept popping in my mind, and I'd start doing research, and there would be another chapter and another chapter, and what I found out, and if you ever get the time, and I know how busy you are, chapter 12 in that book and chapter 18 showed me without a doubt that this country was established to do exactly what it's doing today, Jim. And they call it the American dream, and they named it aptly because we've all been living in a dream world. And if you ever get a chance, the chapters in that book are short, like maybe 10 pages,
mm-hmm.
you know, on 8.5 by 11, but it's not text intensive. Because I've indented the quotes and put spaces between the paragraphs to make it easy reading. If you would read chapter 12, chapter 18, you will see that it was that way from the get-go, honey. And we literally have been living in a dream world. We Americans. I cried, you know, tears of pride. We have to go. Doggone it. Jim, thanks for being here so much.
Well, we'll talk again soon.
Well,
Jackie.
I hope so, because I've got some notes here, questions I wanted to ask you. And we'll do this again real soon, okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care.
Bless you, honey. Folks, we'll be back with you next Wednesday night. Tune in Monday and Tuesday for Darren Week. Good night.